In the presence of laughter and lightness and joy on this Easter Sunday morning, it is sometimes strange to pause and recognize that that first Easter morning began with tears and with fear. This day we rightly celebrate it as the most joyous moment, the feast of feasts, the great day of the Christian year. It didn't start out that way at first. The empty tomb of Easter Sunday morning alone was not yet good news. We know the general story of it all, that after 3 years of itinerant ministry in ancient Palestine, teaching, healing, feeding, breaking traditions, confronting authorities, Jesus was betrayed by a friend to the authorities that he had so soundly offended. He was arrested, quickly tried on trumped-up charges, and he was publicly executed a criminal. Quickly buried in a borrowed tomb, he was dead. And buried, dead and buried with all of the dashed hopes that went with him to the tomb, the dashed hopes of his now disheartened and scattered friends and followers. To every observer, this grand experiment ended a dismal, tragic failure. Or so it seemed on Friday. And then the early morning scene we hear from the gospel, recounted in each gospel with some variation. This one from John, I think particularly beloved because it is so intimate, so compelling. Mary of Magdala, one of the most devoted followers and closest to Jesus, goes to visit the tomb and finds that the stone has been rolled away. She runs from it to tell Peter and the other disciples to confirm that she had found the tomb open and empty. They follow her back. They leave. She stays. Mary stuck around, weeping. Now, not many of us like to hang around in graveyards very much, even if they are beautiful gardens. If we do, we're sometimes considered a little bit odd. But if Mary had not hung out at that garden tomb, she wouldn't have been the first to see and meet the risen Christ. It seems to me that to bear witness to the resurrection, you have to first notice the loss and recognize the emptiness. Feel the grief even, perhaps shed a few tears. And even on Easter morning, there is a moment's reminder that to get here, we had to go through Good Friday. The resurrection of Jesus was a decisive moment in the spiritual history of the world, but it wasn't the end. It wasn't the only resurrection. We are promised it was just the first, and promised it is not the last. We now live in the wake of that first Easter morning resurrection. Large and small resurrections all along have they been happening. How many of them are seen? How many of them remain unseen, yet risen, new life nonetheless? The compelling and always new message of the resurrection is that even in the middle of what may seem like the greatest loss and failure, we can experience, even in the face of death itself, there is still a promise of new life yet to be born. Just as in that ancient garden. Just like that ancient garden, isn't there a place in our own lives a little bit like that? Maybe it's sealed tightly still. Nothing's getting in and nobody's getting out. Maybe the stone's rolled away, but it's echoing with emptiness. What on earth could possibly come next? Find it interesting to notice that in all four of the Gospels that we have in our Bible, there is no one who actually saw the moment of resurrection. Think about it, and you go back and read your Gospels. There's no account of the actual moment of resurrection itself. They found the empty tomb. And in this version, Mary speaks with the risen Christ. In other versions, they saw and spoke with angels as well. There are several stories of post-resurrection encounters with the risen Christ. And those accounts of the resurrection make a great deal of who saw what, who saw it first, and who believed, who reported what to whom. Yet that pivotal, that defining moment to which they all refer, the moment when Jesus was raised from the dead, goes unseen, at least unseen by human eyes. Oh, but don't we yearn to fill in that blank space? How'd you do it, God? Years ago, I recall attending the Glory of Easter production at the Crystal Cathedral in Garden Grove. Anyone remember the Crystal Cathedral? Anyone remember? Oh, merciful heavens, yes. Glory, yes, glory, yes. Glory of Christmas, glory of Easter. Actually, one of our MCCers did the costuming for the Crystal Cathedral productions. Surprise, surprise. And I remember my first time going to the Glory of Easter at the Crystal Cathedral. And I will tell you, it was glorious. I mean, flying angels, real. Now, we could maybe hang someone from a rafter, but I don't know that we could quite pull off the flying angels. It was truly a spectacle. Live animals. I remember this grand peacock being carried out on stage, someone riding in on a camel. It was truly spectacular. Now, in the Glory of Easter, that moment where they portrayed the resurrection was not from Matthew. Matthew gives us an earthquake. Not surprising that in Southern California they chose not to simulate an earthquake in a glass building of thousands. They opted for a laser which struck the stone in front of the tomb. It was a clever option, a clever way to fill in the blank of what we don't ever get an account of exactly how it happened. Because the gospel description of that greatest act of God happens in the darkness of pre-dawn and in silence. How like the God who is a mystery we can never fully grasp. If you've been here during Lent, or were at the very beginning, you might recall that I've been recreating a childhood experiment over these last several weeks of Lent. On the first Sunday of Lent, you may remember this from your childhood, where you put blotter paper and seeds and you keep them moist so that you can see the sprouting seeds over the course of time. And here we are on Easter. That childhood experiment has gone absolutely gangbusters, as you can see. The point of the experiment, a seed looks, unless you know it's a seed, it looks a lot like a pebble. You would ignore it if you were walking past it on the sidewalk. And when it's in the ground, you don't even know that it's there. The weeks of new life that happened before anything would have appeared in this little childhood experiment are now made visible. It's interesting to notice that at the beginning of Lent, the first story of Lent is Jesus in the desert. On Easter morning, we have Jesus in a garden. The journey begins set in the desert, and it ends in a garden. A garden and a desert seem so very different from one another. But I asked us to think about this at the beginning of Lent. How is it you know the difference between a barren desert or a field that is plowed and completely newly planted? How do you know there is anything in that field if you've not witnessed the planting of the seed? Flat, dry, nothing yet green. To the observer, a desert and a field or garden that is filled with seeds may look the same at first. It's what's hidden within. It's what's unseen. The promise of new life that is unseen by any human observer, that is silent and carried beneath the soil, that makes all the difference. We sang the great hymn of Natalie Sleeth at the beginning of Lent. In the bulb there is a flower, in the seed an apple tree, a song in every silence, in death a resurrection, unrevealed until its season. Is there anything more like a desert than a stone-sealed, rock-hard tomb? What possible promise is lying within this lifeless thing? Seen or unseen, risen life nonetheless, the ever-creating God that stirs the seeds to life, in which we have faith, stirs the seeds to life, is the same ever-resurrecting God that raised both Jesus Christ and raises us to new life. Praise God. It's no longer the season of seeds stirring. They are now in full flower. All you have to do is look around. The hidden promise was unseen for a season, something God alone could see, now seen and revealed in its season. The tomb is empty. The seed is now sprung to full flower. Jesus Christ is risen from the dead. May we be raised likewise.